Hey everyone, welcome to today's show. Thanks for joining us. We're going to talk about the Healer Usage Guide and Response Tracker. The physician developed CBD and CBDA drops you can trust at healercbd.com. Dustin Sulak. This is the dosage guide that's offered by his products. Welcome. I created this usage guide to eliminate confusion and ensure your success with Healer CBD products. CBD affects everyone differently. Achieving the best results is based on finding your optimal usage amount and frequency. I trust and recommend Healer products to help you feel your best every day. Signed, Dr. Dustin Sulak, co-founder, Healer, founder, Integrate 8 Health. Board member, Society of the Cannabis Clinicians. The table of contents within, we're going to dissect this pretty good, are Healer Drops Support Wellness, Why Healer Drops, the Healer Spectrum, Getting Started for Beginners, How Do I Know If It's Working, Usage Tips for Faster and Better Results, how you can personalize your own results, Healer Drops for Sleep, and know how much you need, CBD or CBDA, getting started for experienced users, Healer Drops can be used with legal THC products, usage, response, and sleep tracker, and warnings and interaction information contained within the complete guide, which will probably entail multiple shows. It's a subject we've talked about before. So we'll spend the entire hour on breaking down the usage guide, and we'll do that right after we take a few words from our sponsor. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Kettle and Kelp Holistic Healing Hour. There is harnessing the power of light therapy. From Ari Witten, PhD, why you need more sunlight, red light therapy, and choosing the right sauna. We'll be right back in about 20 minutes.
Ari Witten, welcome to the DIY Detox Summit.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
So happy to have you. You are a major expert on light therapy, and it's something I really love and use, so I really wanted you on. First, I want to just ask, how did you become such an expert in this area?
Yeah, you know what? It was really just kind of news to me about maybe 10 years ago that light impacted health. I think, like most people, as of, you know, just going back in time 10 years ago, I was a health conscious person. I already knew lots about nutrition and studying nutrition and exercise and physiology for 10 years at that time, and didn't really have any idea about light and the science around light and how that impacts human health. I had, you know, my sense of what light was you go into a room in your house and you flip a light switch so you can see things. You know, light is what allows you to see, and darkness is the absence of light. And that was really, you know, almost as far as my understanding of light went. And then I started to encounter some stuff around circadian rhythm. And so how circadian rhythm modulates neurotransmitters in our brain, modulates the sleep and wake cycle, affects our energy levels, affects our appetite, affects all kinds of different hormones in our body. And we're just, you know, that field of research has exploded in the last 10 years, where they're discovering new things seemingly almost on a daily basis, as far as, you know, clocks, what they're calling clocks in different cells of our body. So in addition to this central 24-hour clock that regulates our sleep and wake cycles that we have in our brain, we also have clocks in our liver and in our skin and, you know, and all these internal organs of our bodies. And, you know, I mean, the science there is incredible and fascinating and also very complex. So I started to kind of get interested into how light, you know, all these layers of how light is impacting human physiology. And then I started to encounter this whole field of photobiomodulation, which at that time was almost exclusively called low-level light therapy or low-level laser therapy. And at that point, that really is red and near infrared light therapy. So the red wavelengths of light, and then something called near infrared. Now, and we can talk specifically what I mean by that in a minute, but I'll just kind of wrap up this intro story. So I started to encounter some of the research there, and most of it was based on lasers at that time. So there was this whole field around cold lasers or low-level laser therapy that had existed already for 20 years or so, and NASA had done research on it. There was tons of research that was leading to these expensive laser devices, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 laser devices that were being used in physical therapists' offices, and doctors' offices, and chiropractors' offices. And this technology has been around, and I realized that there was this huge body of scientific literature of literally hundreds, or maybe at that time a couple thousand studies, that was showing profound benefits for all kinds of things from this red and near infrared light therapy. And so, you know, that was sort of the initial thing that really piqued my fascination with how light is impacting our physiology. It wasn't just this sort of woo-woo idea, like worship the sun. There was actually lots and lots of science showing that it had very real cellular effects on all kinds of different symptoms and conditions and in different health contexts. So that sort of started my fascination with light and human physiology. And then I delved a lot deeper into circadian rhythm, into the effects of red and near infrared light therapy, and also more broadly, ultraviolet light and vitamin D synthesis and cholesterol sulfate and, you know, all these other different aspects of how light affects our body. So there's a lot of fascinating things we could talk about that could take up many hours of discussion, but I'll let you kind of decide where we go from here.
Yeah, I want to kind of start with a big picture. So, you know, we've learned a little bit about the science behind light and health. And I learned from your work, there's five types of light that the body actually requires. They're called the bioactive form. I wonder if you could just give us that umbrella.
Yeah. So I mentioned a couple types already, but the way this breaks down is sort of, I like to think of five different types of light that are bioactive, meaning that affect the way our body and our cells function. So if we look at an electromagnetic spectrum, and if somebody's by their computer or their phone right now, which I assume they are, they can do a Google image search for the electromagnetic spectrum. And if they search that, you'll see this picture of all these different wavelengths from small to large wavelengths of the electromagnetic spectrum. And it ranges from things like gamma rays and X-rays all the way up to microwaves and radio waves, which are very, very long wavelengths. And those are literally the waves that you listen to when you're listening to your radio. Microwaves are the waves that power your microwave in your house. X-rays, everybody knows what X-rays are. So in the middle of that is the visible light spectrum, that humans can see that part of the electromagnetic spectrum with our eyes. And that is Roy G. Biv, as we all learned in, you know, as little kids, the colors of the rainbow. So red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, okay? And it's actually flipped around. So if you look at that Google image, it's actually the other way. So it starts at violet, indigo, blue, green, you know, and so on. So that's the visible light spectrum. And within that visible light spectrum, there are several wavelengths that have a profound impact on our biology. And then just real quick to wrap up the electromagnetic spectrum, after you get out of the red wavelengths, then it transitions into near infrared wavelengths, which are also bioactive in humans, but they're invisible. We can't see those wavelengths with our eyes. And then it gets into far infrared, which are also invisible, and those we feel as heat in our bodies. So, for example, an infrared sauna is emitting infrared rays, far infrared rays, that's heating up our body. But when we go in the sun and we feel the sun's rays heating up our body, that's predominantly infrared wavelengths that are causing that effect. So five different bioactive wavelengths of light. Let's start with blue. Predominantly blue, but also green wavelengths of light, which we can see with our eyes. So, for example, you look at a blue sky, that's predominantly blue light entering your eyes. And also the sun, even though we see it as sort of yellow or orange, has lots and lots of blue and green light mixed in there as well. Now, those wavelengths of light, there's several layers of how they affect us, but predominantly they enter through our eyes and then feed back through nerves into the circadian clock in our brains, and that controls our circadian rhythm. So light, specifically blue and green wavelengths of light, are the primary regulator of our circadian rhythm, which in turn controls our sleep and wake cycle, lots of different neurotransmitters, lots of different hormones that impact on appetite, energy levels, mood, your sleep, and many, many other variables, almost dozens of different other biochemical variables. But certainly profoundly on our sleep and wake cycles and energy levels and mood. Then we have we can get into the red wavelengths and near infrared wavelengths. And these are predominantly acting, this is red and near infrared light therapy, these are predominantly acting by penetrating through our skin. So they're one of the few wavelengths of light that actually penetrates beneath our skin, deep into our bodies, up to 2.5 or 3 inches deep into our bodies. And they directly interact with our cells and our mitochondria. So they actually penetrate into our cells and then hit a particular receptor on the mitochondria, what's called a photoacceptor, which means it accepts photons of light, and specifically red and near infrared light, and it's called cytochrome C oxidase. And that, you know, without getting too caught up in biochemical details, basically these photons of red and near infrared light hit our mitochondria, which are our cellular energy generators, and they stimulate our mitochondria to produce more energy. And in general, as a general principle, cells of your body, whether it's your brain, your heart, your muscles, your internal organs, anything, tends to work better if your mitochondria are pumping out more energy. There's also some other effects of red and near infrared light, which we can potentially get into, but that's the basic gist. It affects mitochondrial energy production. It also affects different proteins that can be expressed that affect things like healing and regeneration of the cells, or, you know, if it's on your thyroid gland, it might affect how much thyroid hormone is being produced and so on. It can also affect immune function, inflammation in the body, many, many other variables. And then we have far infrared. And far infrared acts on it penetrates just a little bit beneath the skin, and this is actually a common misconception. A lot of people promote an idea that far infrared penetrates very deep into our body. It actually doesn't. Mm-hmm. It penetrates just a little bit into our skin, not nearly as deep as red and near infrared light. And it creates a heating effect. So it can affect things like circulation. It can affect things like the dilation of blood vessels. And it can affect also the performance of your cardiovascular system. And if it heats you up enough, then it can cause so much heat that you can create a sauna effect, and you can create sweating and detoxification and a variety of other benefits associated with sauna use. And then the other type of light that's bioactive in humans is UV light, of course, ultraviolet light. And UV light hits our skin. It stays really very much on the surface of the skin. It doesn't penetrate like red and near infrared light do. And of course, it stimulates the production of vitamin D, which is actually not a vitamin, it's a hormone, and it controls the expression of over 2,000 genes that impact on things like immune function and inflammation in our body, and many, many other, you know, widespread effects of vitamin D throughout our body. And then it also affects the synthesis of another important compound that's not very often talked about, called cholesterol sulfate, which has a few different roles, but cholesterol sulfate it builds up in our red blood cells and creates a sort of charge on the red blood cells, what's called a zeta potential, that allows the red blood cells basically to float through circulation more effortlessly and deliver oxygen to the tissues more effectively. Yeah. So those are, yeah, you have a wide variety of different, you know, pathways there. There's also, you know, a lot of nuances there. So for example, UV light can also stimulate endorphin production in the skin, which then can impact neurotransmitters in the brain. And, you know, there's lots of nuances here. There's also some mechanisms by which light can directly impact neurotransmitters in the brain like serotonin and dopamine in a way that may or may not be mediated by the circadian rhythm. So there's a lot of, you know, different layers of neurotransmitter and hormone and mitochondrial effects that are going on here.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's so powerful. And can we get these all like for free from the sun?
We can, yeah. So we can think of these different wavelengths of light. I like to think of them as nutrients, basically, in the same way that we think of different compounds from the food we eat as nutrients. These are vital nutrients. They're light nutrients. And if we just consider that for a moment, it would sort of be like saying, you know, we need vitamin C from our diet, we need various B vitamins, we need adequate protein and fiber and, you know, things like that. And it would be like people just on massively protein deficient diets and vitamin C deficient diets and B vitamin deficient diets and just having widespread vitamin and mineral fiber deficiencies of their diet. We would all recognize immediately that that's a big, big problem. It's the exact same thing when it comes to light. And I would argue that people really are massively deficient in almost all of these wavelengths of light. So, and in terms of these deficiencies, in terms of these light nutrients. So I believe, you know, if we look at this from an ancestral perspective, our ancestors and even modern day hunter-gatherers and many traditional populations literally spend hours outdoors every single day with the sun on their body. And in the modern world, I mean, I know many, many people, it's extremely common to hear from people that they literally get 5 minutes of sun exposure, you know, less than 5 minutes a day. I mean, they're indoors pretty much all of the time. And even when they are outdoors, they're wearing clothes that cover up their skin from the sun and or sunscreen. And, you know, the sunscreen also blocks some wavelengths of light, in particular UV, part of the UV spectrum. So we have really massive deficiencies. The vast majority of the Western world, the modernized world, has huge deficiencies in pretty much all of these different wavelengths of light.
Yeah, of all the things you mentioned, I'd say the thing that gets tested the most, but still not a lot, is vitamin D. And you see that low pretty much in everyone that I look at results, no matter where they're living or what they're doing. And then also, like, I think inflammation or obesity prevents that conversion too. Is that correct?
Say it again. Inflammation or?
Or obesity can prevent, like, synthesis of vitamin D as well.
Yeah, and there's also different things that can impact it, like magnesium status can also impact vitamin D levels. And yeah, there's a variety of different things that may impact on vitamin D. One of the big misconceptions here, though, is, you know, a lot of people know about that one part of the bioactive wavelengths that I just mentioned. So they know about vitamin D. Everybody has heard of vitamin D and has some sense that it's important for something. The big mistake, the very, very common and very important flaw in most people's understanding of light and vitamin D is they assume that sunlight is the equivalent of vitamin D, or I should say vitamin D is the equivalent of sun exposure. And that by popping some vitamin D pills, they are changing their vitamin D status, and therefore that's what matters rather than the light exposure. So it's very, very common for people to, even people who are very health conscious who are getting tested, to monitor their vitamin D status and be popping lots of vitamin D supplements, and to think that even if, you know, when their blood levels of vitamin D are adequate, that's what matters and not the sun exposure. It's a very, very big mistake. And the reason why is that vitamin D is just one of the many mechanisms by which light impacts our cellular function.
We'll be right back. The second half, we're going to go to three golden nuggets of detox from Jay Davison. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us. Hey, everyone. Welcome back after the break. Here is Dr. Jay Davison. Three golden nuggets of detox.
Dr. Dr. Jay Davidson. Welcome to the DIY Detox Summit.
It is great being here, Bridget.
Great to have you. I'm so glad you said yes, because you've been in this space a long time. You've learned a lot. You've paid your dues. some of which is because your wife was very sick. So you want to tell a little bit of that story and how you got to be such an expert in this field?
Yeah. I mean, it really all came from, kind of the trials and tribulations of life, which I want to encourage, the listener, like if you're struggling with health, that there's going to be a purpose behind it. You might not understand it right now, but believe me, just keep moving forward. And it's in the valleys where we grow, not on top of the mountain. And I mean, long story short is my wife had chronic Lyme disease when she was younger, 7 years old, comatose, and basically, found out she had chronic Lyme disease. They gave her IV antibiotics for a year, oral antibiotics, and basically health issues just from 7 years old on. There was times where they'd flare up really bad and she'd be allergic to everything. And then other times where it seemed like, life was a little bit more normal. She went through, sinus surgery and heart ablations because of SVT with her heart. So all kinds of stuff. And then, our daughter was born. So we got married and her motto was like, I don't want to rock the boat. Like, I just want to, I'm getting by, don't rock the boat. And so there was some flare ups and kind of would calm down. It was like, okay, I think this is manageable. And then when my daughter was born, who is about 7 years old now, basically the bottom fell out. And that was that sign at that moment. I don't feel great about this thought, but I thought in the moment, like, is my daughter a curse? Like, my wife is literally on her deathbed. Like, it was a really bad thing. And now I look at it, I'm like, no, she was the blessing. Like, if it wasn't for my daughter being born, we would have never went deep to figure all this out, to actually get her well, that she would have just kept getting by in life rather than, like, needed that kind of bottom falling out to change everything. And so throughout her journey, I've always been the guy like, well, I want to try it, what she's doing type of thing. And so then I learned a lot, and I had tons of health issues, massive parasite infection, chronic heavy metals, skin problems, all these different things. So kind of we've got my wife's story, we've got my story. And I guess that's just where people started hearing about her story and started coaching people. And I guess just the more people you work with, the more experience you get and really challenging cases, and you keep learning. And I'm like you, I love to, devour content like these summits and just keep learning. And how do we keep getting people better? And it's kind of just went from there.
That's awesome. And you're a chiropractic physician, you've treated a lot of complicated cases, but one thing I've been watching you do in your career of
Okay, welcome back to the show. Continuing with our dissertation about other uses for the hemp plant. Literally millions of wild hemp plants currently grow throughout the United States. Wild hemp, like hemp grown for industrial use, has no drug properties because of its low THC content. U.S. marijuana laws up until very recently prevent farmers from growing the same hemp plant that proliferates it in nature by the millions. So from 1776 to 1937, hemp was actually a major American crop, and textiles made from the hemp were common. Yet the American Textile Museum, the Smithsonian Institute, and most American history books contain no mention of hemp. The government's war on drugs has created an atmosphere of self-censorship where speaking of hemp in a positive manner is considered politically incorrect or taboo. United States Presidents George Washington and Thomas Jefferson grew hemp. They used products made from hemp. They praised the hemp plant in some of their writings. No other natural resource offers the potential of hemp. Cannabis hemp is capable of producing significant quantities of paper, textiles, building materials, food, medicine, paint, detergent,
varnish, oil, ink, and fuel, all being derived from a non-petroleum source. Cannabis hemp, also known as Indian hemp, was enormous and has enormous potential to become a major natural resource that can benefit both the economy and the environment. That's over and above the medicinal. It's huge in the building industry when it's allowed to do so, for the composite, for the cement, for the twining effect of the natural fibers. It's better than fiberglass in oh so many aspects, from a health aspect to the people at the construction sites that are blowing fiberglass, which is bad for your lungs. There's just so many advantages of it, but it's a mindset that is still going to take a couple of generations to fully embrace. It just is. So housing, hemp for the housing industry. 70% of the cannabis plant's total weight is made up of the hard or woody inner core. This part of the plant is totally THC free, which is hemp, and it is indeed used in housing construction. The silica leached from the soil by the plant, combined with the unslaked lime naturally produced, forms a natural chemical bond similar to cement that I just said, which is fire and waterproof. You actually have a more secure home, if you want to be humorous, when it's made from cannabis, not cannabis that you smoke. Hemp has a huge presence in the food industry. Hemp may be grown also for food. The seed alone is very healthy. You've seen me use it in my own cooking shows and cooking in the kitchen with Grandpa. I've been a health proponent and a hemp proponent for years. Okay, so as countries also come on board outside of the United States, it's a whole deliberation unique to where you live in the globe. But hemp is treated as purely a non-food crop, despite the fact that the seed can and does appear in the UK market as a perfectly legal food product. Nutrition. The nutrition industry is yet another industry for hemp. Both the complete protein and the oils contained in hemp seeds, which are rich in lanolin and linoleic acids, are in ideal natural ratios for human nutrition. It's almost the perfect plant. Thus is the continual biblical references to hemp. The fiber industry. Until its rediscovery in the late 1980s, the use of hemp for fiber production had declined sharply over the past decades for all the reasons that I just stated, most of them government restricted. But hemp still occupied an important place amongst natural fibers as its strong, durable, and unaffected by water. Thus is why it's had such a history in the naval, commercial shipping, joy, pleasure shipping, hemp sails, hemp ropes. Hemp's been prevalent in the sailing, naval history, history of the ocean, history of sailing, history of trading, history of commerce. Hemp's been an integral part all along the way. A hemp clothing industry was reborn in the West in 1988 as we approached relaxing the laws totally. And hemp is being used in increasing quantities again in the paper manufacturing industry. The cellulose content is about 70%. So harvesting the fiber is basically harvested from the stem. Smallholder plots are usually harvested by hand, again, has the potential of creating harvesting farming jobs. The plants are cut to 2 to 3 centimeters above the soil and left on the ground to dry. Mechanical harvesting is now common, usually specially adapted cutter binders or simpler cutters. So the machinery has advanced during the 7 years of prohibition of harvesting this crop that's now fully capacitated to do so upon entry and re-entering the agricultural world. So the cut hemp is laid in swaths to dry for up to 4 days, and this was traditionally followed by retting, either water retting, whereby the bundled hemp floats in water or dew, re-wetting, whereby the hemp remains on the ground and is affected by the moisture in the dew moisture. That's why Kentucky happens to be so conducive to growing hemp. It's very dewy moisture, atmospheric, as well as the soil. And by molds and bacteria action, modern processes use steam and machinery to separate the fiber, a process known as thermomechanical pulping. All right, after the break, we'll talk more about some other usages like fuel, moving ahead to be totally fuel independent. We'll be right back. Acknowledged for all those years is exactly because it's an inexpensive way to produce paper, and that was a big to-do politically in the 30s. They felt as though the paper industry couldn't have a competitive edge, so they banned hemp outright and swayed it all around to outrageous movies, and people were going to jump off bridges and all that other kind of stuff when it doesn't even have THC or enough THC to get anywhere as near as intoxicated as they depicted in Reefer Madness. Again, it was a government ploy, so documented and attested to now. So, the quality of hemp paper, that's my point. That's what got in the way government-wise to ban it in the first place. So the quality of hemp paper is superior to tree-based paper. Hemp paper will last hundreds of years without degrading, and it can be recycled many more times than a tree-based paper. Again, why it was banned, due to the industry, jobs, etc. back in the 30s. The real reason. Hemp requires less toxic chemicals in the manufacturing process than does paper made from trees. Hemp can be used to produce fiberboard that's actually stronger because of the intertwining fibers that interweave in the natural manufacturing process, making a tighter knit, a tighter stitch, a tighter bond. Same premise with hemp rope. Hemp has a long-standing history in naval shipyards, shipping, sails, rigging. I'll talk about more about that, maybe in this show or in future shows. Hemp can be used to produce strong, durable, environmentally friendly plastic substitutes. Huge, especially for our posterity, especially moving forward, especially to coincide with what I do, promote good, healthy food, clean water, CBD oil and non-CBD oil products. But remember the motto, it's people, animals, plants, and the planet, not all in that order, and then profit. It's a passion, it's a motivation, it's something I fervently believe in. It's my small contribution to what I kind of can contribute back to leave as a preservation technique that I've talked about over the years for my own granddaughter. And all of this has to do with why I do it and why I continue to do it. So hemp can be used to produce strong, durable, environmentally friendly plastic substitutes. Thousands of products made from petroleum-based plastics can definitely be produced from hemp-based composites when the mindset and the big business and the big farmers and the big government and the big brother steps aside and lets it happen. Stay tuned. It takes years for trees to grow until they can be harvested for paper or wood. But hemp is ready for harvesting only 120 days after it's planted. Hemp can grow on most land suitable for farming, while forest and tree farms require large tracts of land available in few locations. And more as we, you know, build strip malls and so forth, well, that's another whole story for the paper industry. So harvesting hemp rather than trees would also eliminate erosion due to logging, thereby reducing topsoil loss and water pollution caused by soil runoff. It's a step in a very long procedure to recover what we've done to the planet with all the anthropogenic pollution that's out there. Thus is why hemp was so prevalent in the Bible for its multitudinous advantages and uses over and above medicinal, not to minimize the medicinal element of it. We could totally refabricate the building and trades industry, economically, fiduciarily responsible, making it cost effective, business entrepreneurs in the next generation. You could revamp the whole system with the right mindset, lucrative jobs, attainable jobs, attainable businesses, viable businesses, businesses that give back, businesses that are a fair, ethical form of capitalism. Capitalism is good. Socialism is terrible. You want capitalism, but you want capitalism to be amiable, friendly, not deadly, truthful, honest, and just like giving the body the opportunity to do so, it can heal itself. I think given enough time, and it's going to take a really long time and a lot of concerted effort, but I do think, and with the good Lord's help, I do think the earth can rejuvenate itself over time, given the opportunity and the steps in the right direction now. preserve the opportunity for the posterity to take the reins. Hemp could be a key industrial crop. In the stock market, it is indeed a future, just as much as a pork belly ever thought of being. All from a biblical plant. Hemp can be used to produce strong, durable, environmentally friendly goods in the housing, clothing, food, packaging. Hemp seeds contain a protein that is more nutritious and more economical to produce than soybean protein, and it's far superior and better for you. You've heard me talk about hemp seeds and seen me cook with it and hemp seed powder in my Grandpa Bill's episodes and write about it and talk about Mike Adams' product and why I buy lots of his products and promote him as an affiliate in my affiliate program you heard me talk about. Because it's the cleanest, he sees to it that it is in his own ISO lab. So hemp seeds contain a protein that's more nutritious and more economical to produce than soybean protein. Do you know what that could do to rejuvenate farmers? You know what that could do for the farmers right here in good old Maine, right here in Aroostook County? There isn't a better place in the United States to grow hemp than in northern Maine, especially with MOFCA, Maine Organic Farmers Growers Association in Maine. They could tell the big people growing it today how to do their business. Upwards, sideways, backwards, forwards, and do jumping jacks. Again, it's all hurdles. It's all political bog dams. To a large degree, it's business as usual, but it's getting better. And I've often said, when we old cronies die off, for the most part, being totally non-progressive in this geriatric squad for the most part, if we can leave the door ajar with all these benefits, that the perceptive kids are embracing literally with open arms and have a pretty cognitive understanding and scope of all of these processes. From being introduced to raising worms and growing gardens in a lot of school systems, including my granddaughters, up until and including this point of being in the seventh grade. It's as much the system as it is anything else, and it's very much the system of being conditioned to something that we've been brainwashed with. Because somebody wrote a book, made a movie, they can carry a football, throw a hit a home run, swim 150 laps, whatever the case may be. That in and of itself doesn't make them an authority on anything. It's one thing if they tout a product and know about the product and fervently believe in it, aside from the money they're getting to endorse it, and there are exceptions to every rule. Most of them are reading a cue card that was scripted for them, and they know absolutely nothing about the product they take, supposedly. In most cases, they're totally non-effective. One of those famed persons bought into one of those diet control companies. And that said person obviously is rich enough to be able to absorb losses like that, but was a complete disaster because the product is totally, totally, totally not what it's professed to be. So thousands of products are made from petroleum-based plastics and can be produced from hemp-based composites. It takes years for trees to grow, as I said before. So hemp seed oil can be used to produce non-toxic diesel fuel, paint, varnish, detergent, ink, and lubricating oil without them being the toxic petroleum base that they are now. Other ways to try to make user-friendly, environmentally friendly products for the generation, our grandchildren, children, however old you may be, my grandchild, in less than 10 years, will be the decision maker in what goes on in hopefully the USA as we know it in 10 years and as we knew it. Now's the time. A decade in the scheme of things, especially however old you are chronologically, is like the batting of an eyelash. So, the hemp plant, the hemp can be produced in so many other things over and above the medicinal purposes. So I'll stop this here, take another commercial outbreak. We'll be right back and I'll continue and talk about other uses for hemp that also create jobs. We'll be right back.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to what will be the closing episode for today's show. So we continue to do a little bit more statistical data as it pertains to other uses of hemp. Hemp out there in the industrial world, other applications for it, over and above, of course, its strength medicinally. The basic categories of cannabis in their field architecture, cannabis sativa is an annual wind-pollinated plant, normally dioecious and dimorphic, although sometimes monoecious, mostly in several modern European fiber cultivars. The basic morphology of the species, some of which are special hybrids obtained by pollinating females of dioecious lines with pollen from monoecious signs, and plants are predominantly female, so-called all-female. These generally also produce some hermaphrodites and occasional males. All-female lines are productive for some purposes. As an example, they're very uniform, and with very few males to take up space, they can produce considerable grain. But the hybrid seed is expensive to produce. Staminate, or male plants, tend to be 10% to 15% taller and are less robust than the pistillate or female. Note the comparative frail and the discernible difference in the plants when you have them to see pictorially or in person. So prolific is pollen production that an isolation distance of about 5 kilometers is usually recommended for generating purebred foundation seed. A parasitical bract subtends each female flower and grows to envelop the fruit. While small, secretory, resin-producing glands occur on the epidermis of most of the above-ground parts of the plant, the glands are very dense and productive on the parasitical bracts, which are accordingly of central interest in marijuana varieties. The root is a laterally branched taproot, generally 30 to 60 centimeters deep and up to 2.5 millimeters in loose soils, very near the surface and more branched in wet soils. Extensive root systems are key to the ability of hemp crops to exploit deep supplies of nutrients and water. The stems are erect, furrowed and usually branched with a woody interior and may be hollow to the internodes. Although the stem is often woody, the species is frequently referred to as an herb or forb. Plants vary enormously in height depending on genetic constitution and environment, but are typically 1 to 5 millimeters in height or 12 millimeters or more in cultivation have been seen at harvest. Typical architecture of categories of cultivated cannabis sativa. Narcotic plants are generally low, highly branched, and grown well spaced. Plants grown for oil seed were traditionally well spaced, and the plants developed medium height and strong branching. Fiber cultivars are grown at high density and are unbranched and very tall. Dual purpose plants are grown at moderate density and tend to be slightly branched and of medium tallness and height. Some recent oilseed cultivars have grown at moderate density and are shown relatively unbranched. In studies, highly selected forms of fiber cultigen possess features maximizing fiber production. How it would be grown more in an industrial type of using. We'll get into more of how fibers used in such things as jute, rope, and more when we come back after the next commercial break. We'll be right back. Hey everybody, and welcome back to what will be the closing episode for today's show. So we continue to do a little bit more statistical data as it pertains to other uses of hemp. Hemp out there in the industrial world, other applications for it, over and above, of course, its strength medicinally. The basic categories of cannabis in their field architecture, cannabis sativa is an annual wind-pollinated plant, normally dioecious and dimorphic, although sometimes monoecious, mostly in several modern European fiber cultivars. The basic morphology of the species, some of which are special hybrids obtained by pollinating females of dioecious lines with pollen from monoecious signs, and plants are predominantly female, so-called all-female. These generally also produce some hermaphrodites and occasional males. All-female lines are productive for some purposes. As an example, they're very uniform, and with very few males to take up space, they can produce considerable grain. But the hybrid seed is expensive to produce. Staminate, or male plants, tend to be 10% to 15% taller and are less robust than the pistillate or female. Note the comparative frail and the discernible difference in the plants when you have them to see pictorially or in person. So prolific is pollen production that an isolation distance of about 5 kilometers is usually recommended for generating purebred foundation seed. A parasitical bract subtends each female flower and grows to envelop the fruit. While small, secretory, resin-producing glands occur on the epidermis of most of the above-ground parts of the plant, the glands are very dense and productive on the parasitical bracts, which are accordingly of central interest in marijuana varieties. The root is a laterally branched taproot, generally 30 to 60 centimeters deep and up to 2.5 millimeters in loose soils, very near the surface and more branched in wet soils. Extensive root systems are key to the ability of hemp crops to exploit deep supplies of nutrients and water. The stems are erect, furrowed and usually branched with a woody interior and may be hollow to the internodes. Although the stem is often woody, the species is frequently referred to as an herb or forb. Plants vary enormously in height depending on genetic constitution and environment, but are typically 1 to 5 millimeters in height or 12 millimeters or more in cultivation have been seen at harvest. Typical architecture of categories of cultivated cannabis sativa. Narcotic plants are generally low, highly branched, and grown well spaced. Plants grown for oilseed were traditionally well spaced, and the plants developed medium height and strong branching. Fiber cultivars are grown at high density and are unbranched and very tall. Dual-purpose plants are grown at moderate density and tend to be slightly branched and of medium tallness and height. Some recent oilseed cultivars have grown at moderate density and are shown relatively unbranched. In studies, highly selected forms of fiber cultigen possess features maximizing fiber production. How it would be grown more in an industrial type of using. We'll get into more of how fibers used in such things as jute, rope, and more when we come back after the next commercial break. We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, welcome to today's show. Thanks for joining us. We're going to talk about the HeLa Usage Guide and Response Tracker. The physician developed CBD and CBDA drops you can trust at healercbd.com. Dustin Sulak. This is the dosage guide that's offered by his products. Welcome. I created this usage guide to eliminate confusion and ensure your success with Healer CBD products. CBD affects everyone differently. Achieving the best results is based on finding your optimal usage amount and frequency. I trust and recommend HeLa products to help you feel your best every day. Signed, Dr. Dustin Sulak, co-founder, HeLa, founder, Integrate 8 Health, board member, Society of the Cannabis Clinicians. The table of contents within will going to dissect this pretty good, or HeLa drops support wellness, why HeLa drops, the HeLa spectrum, getting started for beginners, how do I know if it's working, usage tips for faster and better results, how you can personalize your own results, HeLa drops for sleep, and know how much you need, CBD or CBDA, getting started for experienced users. HeLa drops can be used with legal THC products, usage, response, and sleep tracker, and warnings and interaction information contained within the complete guide, which will probably entail multiple shows. It's a subject we've talked about before. So we'll spend the entire hour on breaking down the usage guide, and we'll do that right after we take a few words from our sponsor. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
Okay, folks, welcome back after the break, and let's dig into the first part of the usage guide, which will be about the HeLa drops and how they support wellness. You feel your best every day by adding HeLa drops to your morning wellness routine. This small, easy step can deliver big results over time. The HeLa drops support wellness by promoting alertness and clear thinking, and they can help with pain and inflammation after physical activity, can improve mood and promote resilience to stress and relieve irritability, and they may enhance performance and recovery from exercise. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and these products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Why HeLa drops? Taking drops is the most effective delivery route for HeLa CBD and the HeLa spectrum. Our drops are specially developed for sublingual administration, placing under your tongue to ensure fast and efficient absorption and to minimize delays associated with intestinal absorption. They work well as a topical applied directly onto your skin, too. Healer drops are fast-acting and concentrated for better absorption. Simple to measure, one drop equals 1 milligram of total cannabinoids, or 50 mg over ml. Easy to define and fine-tune your optimal usage amount, and it's discreet to use. The power of nature, elevated through science, developed by a physician, lab-tested, non-impairing, organically farmed, vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO. The Healer Spectrum. Taste and feel the difference. The Healer Spectrum is created by our patented nanofiltration process and sets a new standard for removing impurities, delivering more of the plant's entourage of beneficial acidic and minor cannabinoids, terpenes, flavonoids, and complex phytonutrients. Getting started on day one. Always check in with your body and your mind before and about an hour after taking your Healer product. Try checking your inner inventory, and you can set up a journal to do so if you care to do so, which is outlined in the dosage guide. Shake well, place 5 drops under the tongue, hold for about 1 to 5 minutes before swallowing, and then refrigerate after for best usage moving forward. And if you're not actually feeling results, follow the chart, which is in the dosage guide when you get it to do so on page 13, to effectively increase the drops with confidence, shows you the next suggested level, whatever that may be on page 13. I'm not there myself yet. So, you know, if it said 3 and you did that, try 5, whatever the next incremental outline dosages, we'll get to that momentarily. So 1 drop equals 1 milligram total carbonoids or cannabinoids, 50 milligrams over milliliters. And how do you know if it's working? Always check with your inner inventory, as aforementioned here. Check in with your body and your mind before and after about an hour, if you can. You know, schedule. Nothing's like religiously by the clock. Life just doesn't work that way. And if your score improves as you start to chart it with the dosage guide to do so, if you choose that option to do so, it's like anything that you want to equate it to. You're shooting to lose 5 pounds a day and you're doing your calorie count. You're lifting weights. You want to do, you know, 5 more reps, whatever. You know, your journal, same, very similar, but obviously specification of this product as it's applied for what you get the product for, when and if you do, and the guide to guide you as such. So you can rate each on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being worst and 10 best in this scale, in this dosage guide. You want to breathe. How easy and smooth is your breath presently? How easily can you take a deep breath? Seriously, you have to make that assessment. How easily can you take a deep breath? Do you wheeze? Can you take a half breath? Can you take a full breath? Then your body, how easy is it to remain still and comfortable? You may have PTSD or a nervous condition or the fidgets, the widgets, central nervous system disorder. Whatever, only yourself and your practitioner know that. This is the keys and the categories that they hone in on, what's the best product and application accordingly, as is with any proper discussion about any medication or treatment for anything, traditional, alternative, over the counter or otherwise. Usage tips for faster, better results. Results can build over time. by taking helidrops daily. And again, you want to refrigerate for best use after opening initially. And that preserves the CBDA and healer spectrum. And if you're looking in the mirror, it can help you count the drops, actually physically doing so. It's a backup to watch yourself. All kidding aside, it's very easy, especially someone like myself. Did I take two? Did I take three? Did I take one? Did I take any? If you're myself, if you're actually looking at yourself in the mirror, all humor aside, young or old, sometimes, you know, that's the documentation, actually watching yourself as a double check on things, if you will. Life gets pretty hectic. Sometimes it's easy to do. Looking in a mirror can help you count the drops or administer by first placing the drops on a spoon or in an oral syringe. Varietal to whatever suits your routine with whatever it is your routine is. You're taking a shave while you're, you know, whatever, brushing your teeth, makeup, or whatever. If indeed it's a morning ritual or it's in the kitchen or, you know, whatever your dynamic and situation is to diversify how you take the application. So taking drops sublingually under your tongue and holding them in your mouth for several minutes actually increases the direct absorption directly into your blood vessels, which is what you want for optimum results. And the drops will be even better absorbed, resulting in more stronger effect. And when taken after a meal, containing some healthy fat or oil, which we'll also get into in future shows. I'll talk a lot about that with Michael King when he gets here to do so. Sacred clays and tinctures and earthen superfoods and those types of things. The food that would coordinate and correlate with taking this form of medication. So adding drops to food or drink may delay the onset and actually require more drops, or vice versa scenario where and if we apply fasting, which I talk about a lot and been on camera with Tourmaline Spring and so forth. So we'll encompass all of those options, and the dosage guide's pretty good correlating accordingly, you know, to those types of scenarios to help you along the way. So you can learn more from Dr. Sulak at healercbd.com, and most assuredly highly recommend signing up for his online certification course if applicable. Most of the lion's share of that audience are indeed Western practitioners being taught by Dr. Sulak, and then there's folks like myself that bucket lists, or we're in the business in a different capacity, clients, patients, all of the above in my own case, and wanting to have been certified to aspire to be a certified healer. And I passed the course, so that's great. So personalize your results in two simple steps. Find your number of drops per use. Follow this chart to increase your daily dosage and usage by 5 drops every 2 days as a guide under the practitioner's advice and so forth. Your body, what are you taking? What are you eating? How much do you weigh? What's your histrionics? What's your previous medications? What's your familiarity, unfamiliarity, weight, heredity, height, everything? Really, seriously, it's based on so many variables. So add more uses each day. And within 1 to 4 days after finding your guide, your amount, your suggested dosage, if you notice that the effects wear off too early in the day, depending on what your affliction is and what you're addressing, be it sleep deprivation, anxiety, stress, whatever. What about bedtime? That's usually the tricky one with CBD, not so much in and of itself because it's CBD. All the aforementioned things. What are you taking? What are you eating? What have you been prescribed? When, where, and if applicable, what's the nature, if we know, of your sleep irregularity? Is it stress? Is it coffee? Is it caffeine? Is it heredity? Is it something that's been ongoing? Is it short term? Is it situational? Is it your job? Seriously, you know, you have to kind of do an inner inventory again to adjust the dosage accordingly with the guise of your practitioner, as it's with, again, any medication. So first try CBD during the morning and the middle of the day for 3 to 5 days before trying it right before bedtime. And again, depending on, seriously, your practitioner, healer, whatever, in most instances, the only reason that you would be taking CBD before bedtime is to induce a sleep deprivation issue. Most times. It can be, hey, my shoulder's really killing me. I want to get a good night's sleep tonight. So it's not so much that I'm sleep deprived, but I'm going to knock myself out through lack of pain in the shoulder. So it allows me to get the sleep tonight, or your ankle, or your foot, or your arthritis, again, whatever your affliction is. So usually I go by the old motto, if it isn't necessitated, regardless of whatever time that you're finding, not so much that you're having an adverse reaction, but it isn't working or whatever, if it isn't applicable to be taking it at that time of the day for whatever your reason is to take it at all, if you will, don't take it at that time. Seems pretty simple sometimes, and I don't mean it any other way than maybe indeed overstating the obvious, because the obvious gets lost in translation so many times in regards to most subjects nowadays. Kind of understandable. We've kind of had a lot to think about the last couple of years. But this is an easy one to get and make more complicated, like most subjects, than it has to be sometimes. I just had a new client, potential client, friend, relative, whatever the case may be, protecting anonymity, that asked me that question. And my motto always is, as a non-practitioner, go low, go slow. When they say, whatever, 20 drops a day, or 30, or 10, or 20, go low, go slow. Dr. Sulak highly professes that, more so within the confines of the SAD online course, but he does profess that. He also is a huge proponent of getting the best medication, regardless of the source, as long as it's real, good for the patient, practicing his oath in his capacity, but fervently doing that. And talks about, at the very first part of his dissertation of the online class, about how he didn't make his own product for the first 7, 8, 9 years of being in business because it could be perceived conflict of interest and, you know, all that crazy stuff. But he just was sick and tired of hearing his patients be sick and tired with inefficacious medicine elsewhere. So he made a great avowment of that. And yeah, Dr. Sulak's pretty evident about his passion. So let's take another break. We'll come back and we'll do another section of this usage guide. And right at the moment, we're doing pretty well. We're about halfway through it. So we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. Thanks for joining us. Stay with us. Okay, folks, this will probably be the last part of the show for today to try to stay within the hour. So let's see if we can knock the rest of this dosage guide out. And if we don't, subject for another episode in a future show. So let's see, where did we leave off with my crazy brain here right in front of me? All right. Yeah, you want to personalize your results in two simple steps. Find your number of drops per use. Follow the chart that's in the dosage guide to do so when you, of course, get the product and the dosage guide, when, where, and if you decide to do so. And that would increase your daily usage by 5 drops every 2 days. That's something to shoot for as the guide, min-max, if you will. When you start feeling results, stop increasing and keep the same number of drops per use. You know, play along, insulting no one. If it was four drops, stop at four, three, two, one, ready, blast off, whatever. And if it has to go to six, seven, eight, nine, ten, that's not a bad thing. It just means that your situation warrants more medicine. Again, always under the guise of the physician all along the way. And your body, thus is why your body, yourself, and your physician are dictating everything in your life, and not maybe dictating in the literal sense of the word, but when it comes to your health, most assuredly, or applicable for an animal, a veterinarian, of course. So what about bedtime with CBD? That's not the tricky one, not so much tricky because that's not a deceptive word, but not necessarily the proper adjective. It's kind of perplexing because it's early in the infancy of said trials to get documentation of yay, nay, and, you know, possibilities through these clinicians. So it's the vernacular. It's not limbo. It's kind of all signs are good. Ongoing studies are showing positive, but as always, no claims. Nobody makes any claims yet. But I would say, as a layperson, we're hovering while the ongoing studies have a chance to fetter out a little bit more information, not a negative and or positive and or pro or con connotation there, just a fair transparency assessment, because it develops so rapidly. Seriously, what I'm recording today on Sunday, in some cases, not this one specifically, probably, but really can be obsolete information as of last Tuesday when I retrieved the said article or something like that. In some instances, that's how rapidly it needs to be advised, updated, and so forth. So I guess that's the caveat, if you will. So what about bedtime? First, try the CBD during the morning in the middle of the day, as suggested, you know, earlier in the show, and certainly with your practitioner. And then in the middle of like 3 to 5 days out, if all is proceeding well, remember the earlier journal, again, please, your dynamic, it might have been 4 for you. Please play along. It might have been 2 for your next door neighbor or what have you. It's obviously not going to be standard, unique to individuality, weight, heredity, situation, what you're taking, all of those subjects unique to us individually. That's the variance. So CBD may disturb sleep in a small number of people, like whatever. I know people that can drink coffee around the clock and go to sleep they took Valium that much, as opposed to caffeine, if you will. Vice versa. I know people that could look at a Valium without taking it at all, and oh my God, I'll be asleep for a week or whatever. It's all tolerance. Medication, diet, heredity, what's good, what's bad, what's ugly, what's working in synergy. So CBD may disturb sleep in a small number of people when taken directly before bedtime. If you find it to be energizing and you want to try it at bedtime, you may find that increasing your dosage amount when you're finally calling it a day after you've taken it for the purpose to stay up, you know, awake, do work assignments, whatever. Well, when you're finally now trying to use it to say goodnight, that's when, with the advice of your practitioner, you may want to take more dosage at night before bed to induce the sleep capabilities and proponents of it.
So it's a touch and go, just like pretty much any medication. If you had acne and you were doing a skin medication, okay, product A wasn't as good as B, or B was better than A, but if you used both of them in combination on Thursday at 3 o'clock and stayed away from guava fruit because we found out you had an allergy or whatever, right? There's just so many circumstantial situations that you can't do the old adage, take two and call me in the morning. You can, but not for ideal efficacy. And anything that's this new after legality, of course, for all the aforementioned reasons, the concentration of research is so intense. And that's, you ready for a really big revelation? Because there's so much money around the industry as a whole. Capitalism, you know. But capitalism, when it's good, honest capitalism, there's nothing wrong with that. When it's truth in lending, transparency, and good, honest business ethics across the boards, from the science, the scientist, the medicine, the medication, the person, the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker, and yep, the plumber, doctor, lawyer, whatever else peripherally. Of course, especially when we're talking communal. Know how much you need. Save time, save money. The inconvenience of running out of Gila drops by buying what you need to feel your best every day. There's a table, there's a chart, you know, drops per use times the uses per day times 30 days equals your total numbers of drops. As you get that track record with your practitioner, and it's a month, 2, 3 months in, well, under that, guys, obviously, you know, they can say to you, well, geez, you know, we can cut back on this, and by August, you'd be down to, you know, whatever it is, a half a bottle every 6 weeks, and you only need to take 4 drops a day, and or the opposite premise, whatever your track record, your guide, your usage guide, your responsiveness, your results, and the good, good, good guidership of your practitioner. Healer CBD or CBDA. CBDA is acidic, unheated precursor to CBD. Healer CBD contains 15% CBDA because early findings show that even small amounts can have significant effects. Use Healer CBDA if you are using CBD amounts of 25 to 50 plus milligrams per use. And if you are unsatisfied with those results, to precipitate trying the increase and the upage by going to CBDA. You can learn more about the benefits of CBDA directly at thehealercbd.com. And when we come back after the sponsored, I think we can wrap this up for today pretty easily in probably another 10 minutes. Let's do that. Let's take another break. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us. With us. Okay, folks, welcome back. This will be the wrap for today. And I should be able to do it in probably about 10 minutes. So let me catch up with myself here. Okay, the number of drops per use per day. Day one, for all the reasons that we already covered, estimated would be 5 drops. Day two would be 5 drops. Day three, you would go to 10 drops. Day four, again, 10 drops. Then day five, increasing it up to 15. Day six, staying consistent with the 15. And then like day seven, 20 drops. All the way up through each successive day, the dosage guide tells you, without belaboring that point, blah, 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 increasing the dosage. When you get to day 14, following the recommended dosage guide, when you get it to do so, you'll be up to 35 drops. Not necessarily. That should be a good ceiling And you probably, in all reality, would be somewhere a little bit better than in between as a median in most cases. So know how much you need, save time, and you're saving money that way. And the inconvenience of running out of helodrops should be with less degree of frequency, and you know, you're buying accordingly what you need to feel your best, because you have a dosage guide and a histrionics on paper and with your practitioner proving it, yay, nay, more, less, etc. So Helo CBD or CBDA and the array of products. Important note, our 200 milligram trial size dropper is about 20% smaller in the trial bottles, which are available, as opposed to the droppers in the bigger bottles. The diameter of the bigger bottles is bigger. Trial bottles, folks. Come on, trial. Everything's smaller in a trial. There's no great revelation there. And it lays it all out accordingly. And then again, to recant, when you get the dosage guide, how to get started on day one, how to revisit, familiarizing yourself and it with the program and determining how many milligrams of CBD you currently take per use on whatever product you've been taking. If indeed you've been taking one, again, if it's very first time to the product, regardless of the source, then you hone in accordingly. That's all. That's all. Driving a car or whatever, your Uncle Charlie either teaches you or you take formal lessons or you bang into the garage six times and then you go, oh, okay, you got to put it in drive. That's how it works. Riding a bike, you skin your knee or whatever. You take the training wheels off. It really is crazy analogies, but quite a similar. Kind of, sort of, really. Same thing with capsules and gummy edibles, which are clearly outlined in the book, in the course, and at the website. And it's a really good depictive chart that, simply because I've been a patient long enough and, you know, been in the business pre that, post that, and during that, it doesn't mean anything other than my experience. I don't need the guide unique to myself for all of those obvious reasons. I know my proper dosage. I know what works. I know what doesn't. I know how much. I know how little. I know how often, by having the track record and by having Dr. Dustin Sulak all along the way for 6 years as my practitioner's office. So thank you for choosing the healer. Healer helps. As you heal yourself, you're helping others. Healer does donate a portion of our proceeds to worthy causes, education, research, and especially to people in need. Satisfaction, theirs is a standard 30-day money-back guarantee, but it's a 30-day money-back guarantee. You can contact them directly at healercbd.com, help@healercbd.com, mail or otherwise. It's Healer Hemp LLC, 119 Orion Street, O-R-I-O-N, and that's Brunswick, Maine, 04011, and or directly through my link at bhsales.vp, that's Victor Peter, .com. So bhsales.vpweb.com. Go direct to the manufacturer icon and follow the link. You'll see the bottle of Dr. Sulak's medications there, and that will get you direct And if you exercise that option, you qualify for BH Sales 5025 virtual vouchers. Going to close out the show for today there. We'll pick up the subject later. We'll see about the invite to Dr. Sulak. If it's meant to be, he'll be here. If he's not in physical body voice, he will be through the rebroadcast of his webinars, which I attend post of taking and completing his courses. I just listened in last Wednesday, and I'll be listening into the next ones moving forward. Thanks for joining us today. Always remember that BH Sales, Kennel Kelp, It Is Animal Products, CTFO, Dr. Dustin Sulak, all these providers, vendors, practitioners, intuitives, we all promote good health in all animals, their people, plants, and the planet. Invited audience where applicable, when you've taken me up on my offer, when, where, and if. BH Sales team, developing sales team, your teams, your invitees, alignable network marketing people, welcome one and all. Ubiquitous audience, thank you. My standard followers, both of you, thank you. A little tiny bit of humor. There's really three. Again, Justin, thank you. Many goodwill ambassadors, thank you so much. And we grow exponentially, both at the shows and in business, through your referrals. If you do indeed like us and feel comfortable in sharing us, if you physically do both by checking the boxes, it helps us on social media with the algorithms and also escalating in the search engines, because the message will resonate by having greater exposure, because everybody knows somebody in pain or suffering and or has a pet that is also either in pain or suffering. Bye-bye for now, and we'll see you in the next episode. May God bless.